Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Let's stay in Rutherford County where I am, or let's head to Rutherford County where I am. Rick Stockstill, MTSU football coach, is indeed on the line with us. Good morning, or should I say good afternoon, Coach. How you doing?
Good afternoon, my quarantine brothers. How are y'all?
It has been weird doing a show from our homes for over a month now. How about for you? It's got to be, I mean, it's weird for everybody, but what about a football coach?
I'm zoomed out. I am zoomed out, my friend. Just what we're having to deal with, you know, like everybody right now. So you have, staff meetings every day, you know, with your staff in the morning and just kind of update and keep them posted and organized on everything that we got going on, and then try to do the same thing with your players. Tomorrow is the last day of school, and then exams start Friday. So staying on top of them about that. But now it's been very, very unique, to say the least.
And the draft this weekend was unique on the NFL side of things, a virtual draft. Did you find yourself checking it out? Because we were all wondering, you know, how was it going to look? And we've seen it. What did you think?
Yeah. My limited expertise on that kind of thing, I thought the NFL did a fantastic job of being able to pull that off, you know, from a virtual standpoint, just everything that probably went into that, you know, with cameras in the players' homes and then the GMs and head coaches and everything that they had to do to pull it off. So I would have said it was very successful, but, you know, that's my limited knowledge on it. But thought it was good.
Speaking of that, Rick, Chris Jackson was the last pick by the Titans in the 7th round. The young man in the secondary from Marshall. Obviously you guys saw Marshall. What do you know much about him? Do you remember him?
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was a good player. Very productive in his whole career, you know, there at Marshall. I think he's, you know, from, again, you know, the Titans are a lot smarter than me, but I think he's a good tackler. He's a good, smart football player, so I think he'll fit in good. He's on all their special teams at Marshall, so I'm sure, you know, the Titans looked at that as well. I think he's a good football player. And you know, you kind of look at, you know, the guys here recently in the last few years that the Titans have taken, you know, with Kevin Byard and then the tight end out of FIU and, the receivers that they had from Western Kentucky. All those guys have been very productive, you know, players for them. And, you know, you get a guy coming from our school or a Conference USA school, you know, they got that maybe a little bit bigger chip on their shoulder, you know, something to prove, you know, like those guys I just mentioned. And so I would think he'll have a chance to, you know, to have a chance to make the team. That's where you got to start. And hopefully he'll be able to contribute to them.
Wow, that's a really good point. That has definitely worked out for the Titans. Kevin Byard, of course, who you coach, is the highest paid safety in the league. And Jonnu Smith is now going to be their number one target at tight end. And they are very, very high on him. So good point by you. So you brought up the Zoom meetings and, you know, the unusual times. How much can you do virtually? How much can a coach at this level actually do when you can't sit there and be with your team and be with your coaches and do normal activities this time of year?
You know, that's a good question there. I think it's the big thing with the players, you know, and when you meet with, because we were meeting with them 2 to 3 times a week from a football standpoint. you know, it's one thing being able to see it, you know, having a diagram in the background and a coach talking about a particular play or you know, front or coverage or whatever it is. It's one thing to be able to talk about it, but then for that player to go and then apply it to the field is another. Because normally, you know, in a normal situation, you're going to meet with them and then you're going to go out and practice it. You know, so I think it's, you know, maybe a little bit overkill, a little bit that I don't know how much they're actually remembering of it because they're not getting a chance to do it. But I think it's keeping them engaged football-wise. It's keeping them they're giving them something to study, giving them something to go out and practice, you know, if they can in an area. So there are some limitations to it, but I think the big thing is just keeping them engaged is positive. And then, you know, with the staff, it's, you know, with us, it's more, you know, right now keeping them updated academically and then watching film from a recruiting standpoint, getting kids evaluated because, you know, we're not going to have the high school spring practices that we normally go to and we're not going to have summer camps. So we've got to really do a good job of, you know, from a film evaluation as we head into the fall. And then, you know, just getting ready for those first few weeks, first few opponents, you know, of the season. So that's about all we're doing, you know, on Zoom right now. And then just try to update them with, you know, this ever-changing, daily changing situation that we're in.
Talking to Rick Stockstill, the head football coach at Middle Tennessee. And, Coach, as you say all that, I know that it didn't just happen, right? This is brand-new stuff. So I'm curious, go back to the first couple of days when you and your staff had to sort of put together the program of this situation you've never been through before, how you were going to communicate with your players and things like that. What were those days like?
Well, initially I thought FaceTime – you know, because I'd never heard of Zoom until, you know, last time I heard was Aretha Franklin, "Who's Zooming Who?" And you know,
yeah, I remember that song, yeah.
Tell you how old we are. That's the only time I heard of Zoom. And, you know, so FaceTime, and then I started, you know, finding out more about Zoom, you know, so, but we had to buy it as a university. You know, so with the first week we went FaceTime with the staff, and then when we got squared away on Zoom, it was that. So I just, you know, got everybody, Eric Bartlett, our video guy, showed everybody how to get hooked up on Zoom and what we do and everything. So the transition of that has been easy. And I just, you know, now you just, you know, keeping everybody updated. I learned how to change my background setting there. So I changed that because I felt like I was just talking to myself those first, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of doing it. You're just, you know, talking to your iPad, and it was, I needed something to look at different. So, no, it's been good. It's been an easy transition, to be honest with you. It's just frustrating that we can't do it face-to-face.
Well, Coach, we've talked so much. We're sitting here speculating on what can happen. Nobody knows. But one of the challenges that I feel like is going to happen that we've tried to delve into is every university is different, right? You go to one university, so many kids, it may be a little bit smaller. Almost everybody lives on campus. A place like Middle Tennessee, a huge enrollment and a lot of people commuting sometimes from home. It's a different dynamic everywhere you go, which is going to make it probably very difficult for all conferences, all schools to be able to get on the same page as to how you're going to prepare your athletic teams accordingly. So I'm sure you've got to be in communication with your university officials to figure out what the options might be.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, everybody's different right now. And, you know, my big concern you know, is our current players right now is, you know, they went home for spring break March 4th or March 5th, you know, and they haven't been back since. And when they left here, they had a meal plan. Now they go home, they don't have access to that meal plan. You know, they may be in a home where they've got brothers and sisters and they've been forced to come home. They may be in a home where their mom, dad, parents just got laid off their job, and you worry so much about, you know, their health and safety of not only this, you know, virus, but also, you know, their health from a nutrition standpoint, because they don't have the access to the meals that they had when they left here. So, you know, that's a big concern of trying to find ways to, you know, get these guys, you know, and you talk about living off campus, you know, they still have to pay their rent. And, you know, how's that going to affect them come June and July, you know, if we're not in school? So, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, elements to this that these kids are being affected by, other than just, you know, having to do classes online or not knowing when the season's going to start. But, you know, and then to the other part of your question, you know, each conference in America had to submit a 6-week, 5-week, and a 4-week return to play. And so we've done that, and now just kind of waiting for the NCAA, and I don't think we'll know anytime soon, but for them to say, okay, you guys can start. And I don't think they'll say, Middle Tennessee, you can start July 15th. Alabama, you can't start till August 1st. I don't think that'll happen. I think once we start, we'll all start on the same starting date.
Rick Stockstill is with us, the head football coach at MTSU. And coach, you know, there's a lot that goes into a football season, and, you know, you obviously are focused on what's happening on the field, but I look at things from a financial standpoint too. And as we have the discussion of potentially having a season with no fans, you know, for a program like MTSU, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot to kind of take in. So what are some conversations that you and Chris Massaro have had? Have you thought about that at all, of what it would be like not having fans at Floyd Stadium?
Yeah, you know, not having fans, not just here, but at any place, will have a drastic effect on every athletic department. And you think about, you know, the Tennessees of the world, the Alabamas of the world, you know, the Clemsons of the world, the Florida States. Those guys are making $1.5 million, $2 million a home game off ticket sales, concessions, parking, you know, all that stuff. You know, so they're not wanting to – they're going to get impacted, you know, probably more so than we are, because, you know, they're going to have a lot more people at their games than what we do. But – you know, it would be hard. I hope it doesn't get to that. I mean, you guys know, I mean, part of being an athlete is, you know, playing a game is the excitement of the crowd, you know, and you play a game, it's almost going to be like a Saturday spring scrimmage, you know, if there's no fans there, that you're going to have to do a great job of, you know, getting yourself emotionally, you know, excited to play. You know, you're not going to be able to, you know, feed off a crowd for that energy. So teams are going to have to do a good job of, you know, bringing that energy themselves, because it's not going to be like they're used to. But if we don't have fans, it'll impact, you know, the big guys just as much as us.
Rick, I'm being told you've got other things on your plate, so we've got to let you go. But I think I may reach out to.
I got till 12:30. Whatever y'all need.
Oh, Chase, I was going to ask you. I was going to let you know that I was going to probably reach out and have you teach me how to do the Zoom backgrounds, because I need to learn that. I was impressed by that.
If you go on your iPad, tap the right hand corner, those little three little dots. And it'll pop down at background, and you can pick whatever color, whatever you want.
I like it. All right, I'm going to try it out today. Chase, did you have another one?
Yeah, I'll just follow up on just from the student athlete point of view of the being able to go out and play in front of a crowd, and the fact that there could be a chance that your guys and all of you could be, I guess, robbed of that this year because of uncontrollable circumstances. You know, what do you think those conversations will be like between you and your football team if, in fact, they're not going to be able to play in front of fans in a stadium?
Well, you just got to – it is what it is. I mean, you just kind of, you know, educate them and talk to them about it and everything. But, you know, and you think about it, and I didn't say this, but, you know, if they're saying it's not safe for fans to come and watch a game, you know, it might be pretty hard to say it's safe for a player, especially a football player, to go out there and who's going to lay on top of each other, who's going to breathe 2 inches away from his face, you know, who's going to, you know, the contact that you have in football, you know, if it's not safe enough for fans to come watch, is it really safe for players to lay on top of each other and to breathe on top of each other that close?
Yeah. How much, too, do you think about, and this could be more of a question for Chris, but football being the biggest sport for a university and the type of financial implications that a football program has, how much have you thought about that as it relates to the other sports at a school like MTSU?
I mean, you think about it all the time because, you know, football is, you know, for 99% of the schools in America, you know, it's the breadwinner. And, you know, it affects, you know, the other sports. Like you said, you know, there's a reason, you know, you play Michigan and Iowa and, you know, all these schools, Alabama's for $1.5 million, $2 million a game. There's a reason you play those games, because you need that money to, you know, supplement the other sports. So it'll have, just like the Florida State athletic director said, I read something. He said that, you know, God help us all if we don't have a football season from a financial standpoint. You know, so even at a school like Florida State, you know, how much they rely on, you know, the football budget.
Rick, you and the family continue to be safe, and hopefully you'll get out on the field sooner than we would all like it. Sooner rather than later, right? That would be great.
I'm with you on that. You know, I'm about to go stir crazy, to be honest with you.
I think we all are. Hey, thanks for the visit as always, and we'll certainly talk to you soon.
Sounds good, my man. Appreciate you.
All right, that is MTSU football coach Rick Stockstill down in Murfreesboro. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We thank Rick Stockstill for joining us. Joe Ward coming up at 1 o'clock. He officially retired yesterday from the NHL. Former Predator, spent 3 seasons with the Players Tribune. He put that out there yesterday. So we'll get a chance to catch up with Joe Ward. It's been a while, and we'll do that at 1 o'clock. We've talked about this before.
By the way, this song ought to make a comeback here, right? I mean, who's zooming who? That's the theme song of our whole country right now.
It's very true.
Everybody's zooming everybody.
He said he is zoomed out.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah. Some of these things, you get on, there's so many people on there, and who's talking. Like, if it's just a casual one, it can get chaotic. And you're like, I'm backing out. I'm just going to sit and listen. And even when you do that, there's only so long you can have 10 people talking at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about something that Rick brought up in the interview, and something that we've talked about a lot. But as we inch a little bit closer to hopefully sports trying to figure out how they're going to put on their product, how weird it is going to be, because it does seem like the one thing that we're all on the same page of, at least for this discussion right now today, is it just doesn't look or feel like we're going to have fans in the stands. And that may be the case for all of 2020. I don't know, but that's what it kind of feels like, at least for the immediate future. Whether we're talking about the PGA or NASCAR or MLS or UFC coming back here sooner rather than later, those sports actually could be back out there on their playing surfaces in the next 2, 4, or 6 weeks, somewhere like that. So how weird is it going to be? Because we just thought a virtual draft would be weird, and yeah, it was weird, but we got used to it, and a lot of people have come away and said, I actually liked it. It was actually pretty cool. So how do you think we've watched a baseball game in Taiwan, which they're still playing their league? It's a small league. It's a small island. Taiwan has been responsible with that, and so they're playing baseball over in Taiwan. So we saw what that looked like with no fans. But how do we really think it's going to look and feel watching sporting events with no crowd, no fans, no signs, no fans sitting there crying or with that face that's become a meme, right? None of that will go on. Like, how weird will it be to see that?
It's going to be weird, but
it'd be crazy. It's going to be unlike anything we've seen before. I do think it will happen in some of these sports. The biggest question I have is, in hearing Coach Stock talk about all of these things, right, that go along with playing with no fans for specifically college football, if you knew that, and this is the thing, we're not going to know, but if the options were, hey, we're going to play the season on time, but we're going to play it with no fans. It's just too risky. We can't have big gatherings yet, but we feel safe that the players are low risk, et cetera. We got all these measures that we can take. If somebody gets sick, we can do this. People are going to get sick anyway. Whatever you want to rationalize that can go, but we're not ready to have the major gatherings yet. But option B is we have to put the season off, but we could play with fans and get the revenue from the ticket gates and things if we played February, March, and April. If that were the choices, would you choose to play the games for all those reasons Coach Stock was talking about with fans in the stands, even if it meant you played two seasons in the calendar year of 2021? Forget about all the logistics and the things that, Darren, you've pointed out, trying to play a game in February, all these things. I know there's big challenges. But if those were your only two options, what would you choose?
But you're guaranteeing that everything will be fine in February, March, and April?
Yeah, I don't think anybody can use the word guarantee.
Well,
but I'm saying those are the two options presented to you.
But you're saying you can pull off I don't believe it can be pulled. You know, I'm not sure. I don't believe it can be pulled off. So it's like it's hard for
okay,
me
but
to...
I'm saying that these are things that have been tossed out there. So let's just go with these two. You would choose to play with the fans in the stands, wouldn't you? You would delay your season to capture the revenue and have the pageantry of everybody in the stands.
Well, yes. And Rick Stock still brings up a really good point that it hit home when he said it. And that is the unique dynamic, right? Once again, as we've said, the difference between professional sports and, you know, the NCAA is they are student athletes. And how do you tell people that you can't be in the stands and you can't go to class, but you're telling students you need to be out on the football field practicing, and then, oh, by the way, show up on Saturdays and play against an opponent, right? That's a tough sell. Now, wait a minute. The students that I have classes with, they can't come to the game. It's not safe for them.
Right.
It's not even safe for us to go to class with them because we got to do it online. But yet, for me, I'm supposed to show up to football practice and then show up on Saturdays for a game.
Very complicated.
That is very, very complicated and an extremely tough sell. And when he said that, and then I visualized it and thought about it and processed it, and went, wow, yeah, that's really almost impossible to pull off. Like, how do you get away with even saying we're going to do that? It really makes no sense when you start digesting and processing what he said, right? It makes no sense to tell them yeah, we need you for practice and we need you on Saturdays for games.
Well, and the more people you have saying that, not just coaches, I mean, but the more people that come out and say that, and just like you just said, you say it yourself, the more thoughts you're going to have of, you know what, we can't do this. I mean, that, like, why is it safe for us and safe for the players, but it's not safe for the fans? So, I mean, yeah, I had the same reaction you did, Darren, when he said that, of kind of picturing it in my mind of, yeah, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense now, does it? So I get that.
To me, it almost makes it virtually impossible to come out and say, you know, people can't be there. Students can't be in class, but we need you at practice and at games on Saturdays.
But here's the even more complicated problem. What if school A says, yeah, I think we're all right. We've done the research. We're not in a hot spot. We're okay to have our students on campus and going to class. But a school B in the same conference is in that same mode of, we're not ready to have the students on campus yet. We're going to do everything online. I mean, how do you delve into that? What do you do? There's not a czar of college football that says, here's what we're going to do, everybody. Like, every conference is going to have a lot of issues even within their own conference, let alone how to make it uniform between all the conferences.
Well, he just said also in that interview that everybody's going to be, right, everybody's got to be on the same page. Everybody's got to be uniform. It can't be, you know, Conference USA can come back to practice, but the SEC saying, yeah, we're not ready. Or, you know, the ACC says, yeah, we'll come back. And the Big 12 says, yeah, but we're not ready. Right? Everybody's got to be.
Well, I think the Power Five dictates it, though.
Everybody's got to be doing the same thing, right?
Yes, but you can't. But I think, like, my point is, if the Power Five come out and say, and they're all on the same page, hey, we're going to do this, then the group of five, the smaller conferences, are going to have to follow suit. It can't be the other way around. Like, if the Conference USA and the group of five, and they're like, yeah, we're going to come back, and then the Power Five, to your point, if they're like, nope, we're not, then it's done. But the argument's over. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is, I'm not sure it really makes a hill of beans whether it's Power Five or somebody that's not considered a Power Five conference. I just think they all have to be – it has to be uniform. It has to be all for one or all for not, right? I mean, either they're all coming back and they're all going to be practicing, they're all going to be playing, or they're not. Like, I don't think – it's not going to be determined state by state or conference by conference. It's got to be.
And that decreases the chances that you can play.
Right. You've got to get everybody on the same page, whether it's Hawaii or whether it's the state of California or whether it's Texas, Georgia, Tennessee. You've got to get New York, right? So
that's why I'm thinking the spring is looking more and more of a – the more realistic possibility, relatively.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the fallout if you don't have a college football season. And so we know that it's really not even – I don't even know how they could do it. I think it would be the ramifications would just be detrimental. So they have to figure out a way to do it. So you can't do it with what we're talking about, because that just makes no sense. So to me, it's starting to look and feel like the only chance you've got is to get on your knees, do a lot of praying, keep your fingers crossed, and hope by spring you could actually pull it off.
Or there just has to be a lot more data available that we learn, and testing, all of that stuff. We got to go a long way in the next few months. And if they do, maybe they'll have a better picture of what can be done. That's our only chance. As we sit here today, it's not practical. But if they can make big advancements in the testing, in the breakthroughs, all the people that are spending every day studying this and finding out things, maybe we can make a lot of strides there to give us a clearer picture.
We'll come back and we'll talk about the NHL side. There has been some stuff out there since we were last on the air that we'll talk about it. I know Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan talked about this on ESPN. So we'll kind of talk a little bit more on the hockey side of things. What does that mean as we get prepared for Joel Ward at 1 o'clock? We'll do that on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Mike Vrabel's kid was sitting on a bar stool. He was not in the bathroom, like a lot of you thought on Thursday night. By the way, we haven't even brought that up. A little disappointed that Mike Vrabel's household was a lot more quieter, at least in the TV shot, on Friday and Saturday.
Well, I wonder if that's because...
Nothing. He squashed it. He said, you guys are out. Your 15 seconds of fame is over. I was a little disappointed in that.
Well, and you know, we talked about this on Friday, that he had to answer questions about it, and you know, it could be he told him to get out of there because he didn't want to answer any more questions. I don't know.
Oh, there's no doubt he put the kibosh on it. There's not a doubt in my mind. He said, yeah, you guys are done. You're not in the shot anymore. I'm not answering any more questions about you guys.
And I think it's kind of to each their own. You know, John Robinson talked with us yesterday about how it was cool for him that his daughters got to see what he did. And I'm not speaking for Mike Vrabel. I'm sure he loved having his family there that they could see it too. But at the same time, you know, he's doing a job. And so maybe you have the first night and it's new and it's different and it's prime time, it's the first round, and then after that it's like, all right, I gotta go to work. I think it's to each their own. You know, I don't have kids. You guys do, so maybe you have a better idea of it. I don't know how much your kids have been around while you're doing the show. I've seen Maddox on some Zoom calls, but, you know, I don't know how I would react if I was in that situation. I guess it's what I'm trying to say.
I don't think it's more about him saying, all right, you guys got to get out of the room, I got to work. I think it's more about the picture that was created, you know, with the outfit, the mullet, and the potential sitting in the bathroom that wasn't sitting in the bathroom shot, you know. I just think it was all the hubbub about what was around him, right, and all the attention that it got. And it got a ton of attention, not just locally, nationally. And I think that was more about Mike Vrabel putting the kibosh on it, saying, yeah, I'm not answering any more questions about, you know, Mr. Freeze outfit or, you know, my old jersey or my kid sitting in the bathroom that wasn't sitting in the bathroom. You know what I mean? That's the way I feel about it.
Sure, and I think that's fair. And look, it may have, with what you just brought up, it may have been completely different if there wasn't the perception that one kid was using the bathroom. I mean, if it had just been the costumes, then they might have been there Friday. Who knows? But I just, you know, and I would totally understand it from Mike Vrabel's point of view of, I don't want to answer any silly questions about this again, so let's just squash it. But who knows? Or as Joe Rexroth said in his article, let's just flush it.
Or let's just flush it. Pekka Rinne, speaking of Zoom calls, Pekka Rinne did conduct a Zoom call with the local media yesterday, and he talked about a variety of things, but he also talked about some things that we've talked about on this show, but they wanted to know from him how he views maybe a possible 2-week training camp leading up to maybe a restart or a reboot of where they left off.
To be honest with you, with all these different scenarios and rumors going on, we as players, as a team, we haven't really talked about different options too much. I feel like everybody kind of is waiting for the bigger news, that there's actually some direction that the league and the players association is going to take. And so I try not to, you know, get involved with, you know, what might happen. You got to be ready for anything, but ideally would be best if we have some type of training camp before we start playing. But like I said, I feel like it's still too early to say. You know, there's so many different rumors going on, and you know, I feel at the same time, I feel like it's starting to narrow down to more specific things, and there has to be some truth behind that.
All right, that's Pecorine talking about the kind of the scenario that we've been discussing on the show of a lot of these guys are over in Europe and they'd have to come back and get quarantined. And then these guys would also kind of have to get their bodies back in shape and get things going. It's a unique sport. They don't have sheets of ice at their house, and they're not out there skating every day. So you would have all that in play. There's been the scenario of neutral sites, but that all or that's or the, I guess, off locations, North Dakota, places like that. That's all been squashed. Now it's neutral sites picking some venues. Emily Kaplan and Greg Wyshynski of ESPN and ESPN.com have put a really lengthy article up there about this. And I guess what jumps out to me, and I'll just start here. There's a lot of things because, like I said, it's lengthy. I wonder why Nashville is not included in these possible sites. Like, Nashville makes way more sense than Raleigh, North Carolina, as we talked about. Because we know that setup, and it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I wonder why, I mean, Nashville's, I don't want to say it's comparable to Las Vegas, but Las Vegas makes a ton of sense because you've got everything in this condensed area where everybody, if you're going to be holding several teams in buildings and hotels and what you need to do, you can accommodate. Nashville is set up similarly, not exactly like the Las Vegas Strip, but as we know, Bridgestone Arena has got that unique location where there is everything around it, and it's all within walking distance. Why isn't Nashville on that list?
Because
well,
I
it's
think
very
that...
simple. It's Las Vegas, for better or worse, is looking at opening things up with not a lot of regard to how they're going to do it, how they're going to keep the numbers down, how they're going to socially distance in a casino. But right now, that's the way they're going to go. We know that Nashville has a very distinct plan, data-driven, of the different phases that we read the other day. And it's different than a lot of our state that might open up a little bit earlier on some levels, but I think that's the clear reason. And I read this, Mike Russo had a similar type of article where he and some colleagues from The Athletic did something similar to what Emily Kaplan did and Greg Wyshynski on ESPN's website. And that was mentioned that, you know, Nashville, Davidson County has got the highest number of cases. You know, it's got more people, so that stands to reason. And so they're not in theory going to be opened up quicker. So that's I think, the simple answer.
Quicker by June?
Well, that's what I don't understand is, you know, some...
We're not talking about
by June. Right, I know. That's the thing. You know, by June, Nashville could be in an excellent position because of the measures they're taking today, whereas a city that's opening up, in theory, could have a lot of issues if things go a different way by June, right? So that's the moving target.
I mean, I've got a buddy that I talk to on a regular basis that lives in – two buddies that live in North Carolina that I talk to on a regular basis. Are they any further along to open than where we are in Tennessee or in Nashville? I don't feel like they are at all. In fact, they've been protesting there to open up their state. So I don't know how North Carolina is any further along or looser on how they're conducting their business than we are.
No, but I think, too, the perception is out there that you see the state of Tennessee is basically reopening, and Nashville, though, is not.
It's got a four-phase plan.
Right, and we're not even in phase one yet. I mean, it's just we're not ready. And I think I think it's smart. You don't want to rush it. You don't want to get back in the mess that we're in. But I think that the NHL has to look at it from that point of view. So that if Nashville isn't ready, Nashville makes a ton of sense because not only do you have the arena that's downtown next to a ton of hotels, but you have six sheets of ice that aren't that far from there. You have obviously the Ford Ice Center in Bellevue and the one in Antioch and then Centennial. So you have the practice space that you could house a bunch of these teams. But
And you have the locker rooms. That's
the
another big
rooms,
thing.
Yep.
You have to have
at least four.
What's four.
Four,
yeah,
yep.
And preferably more. And I think our arena has more than four because they've hosted the SEC tournament, the NCAA tournament. They've got a lot of locker rooms back there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, like, usually the visiting team, when they come in, they use two locker rooms, correct? They have the actual locker room that they – you know, the game locker room that the media is allowed to go in, then they have another one where they shower and all that stuff across the hall.
I don't know if that counts for two.
I guess I just don't know the dynamic. I don't feel like anybody is – I mean, we've all seen the mayor of Las Vegas and her comments, but from things I've read that she doesn't have any jurisdiction over the Las Vegas Strip, so she can say whatever she wants, but she's not – she doesn't really have any power over the Strip, per se. She may be the mayor of Las Vegas.
Yeah, which
so
I don't understand that.
I don't either. I don't understand. That's not my world. I don't
weird.
Understand
that
it
was
either,
a whole
Chase.
Weird deal.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm getting at is I don't really feel like anybody's any further along than anybody else. So I don't understand where they come up with these cities. And it's Minnesota and Edmonton and all these places that have been thrown out there. So they're – that much further along than Nashville?
I don't know.
I just don't get that vibe. So
I think Nashville makes a lot of sense, and
Nashville,
I don't know
Nashville
that,
makes a ton of sense.
And I think it's probably fair to say that if there's any way to do it, Nashville would be very interested in hosting.
Willie, there's nobody on this show that can give a better perspective than you. You travel to all these sites. On a yearly basis, multiple times in some cases. So you know the lay of the land. You tell me. You envision it right now.
Yeah.
Go around NHL markets in your head and tell me Nashville doesn't make more sense than practically anybody other than Las Vegas.
I think it could work very well in Nashville. And I've been surprised that I've seen two different articles that had Nashville as a – no go. And I don't know what
right.
that's based on. I don't know if that's speculation or if that's somebody at the league telling the journalist, yeah, these cities are out. But that was Mike Russo. He said, you know, Nashville was on the no-go list, which surprised me because I think Nashville would be interested in doing it. But all of it is predicated on, as Gary Bettman has said all along, we're going to do it based on data and health, and we're going to get the okay from all the health experts before we go forward with this.
This is why she doesn't have jurisdiction over the Strip, because okay. the Strip is considered to be in Paradise, Nevada, not Las Vegas. I know that's weird.
What?
But the Las Vegas Strip is
Paradise.
Is in the city of Paradise and not the city of Las Vegas.
It's in the heart of Las Vegas.
That's the information that I have been given and that I have.
Is that where Wonder Woman is from, Paradise Island? Is that what we're talking about?
That could be.
Well, why don't we just say Bridgestone Arena is not in Nashville, it's in Smashville. So Smashville has
yes.
totally different jurisdiction.
John Henry, if you're listening, incorporate Smashville, secede from Nashville.
Bridgestone Arena is not in Nashville, it's in Smashville. So different rules. And so John Cooper, it's not his jurisdiction. So I don't know. Let's get on with it.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That
I have
the
never
Las
heard
Vegas
that
strip.
Before. The Las Vegas Strip is Paradise, Nevada. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
I've never heard that term.
I've never heard that before. I've heard people say Las Vegas is paradise to them, but I don't think they actually meant literally it's in, you know, it's paradise, as in referencing Paradise, Nevada. I've never heard that before.
Right, and they're both in Clark County.
Did you
County.
Get that from The Onion?
No. I've looked this up. The Las Vegas Strip, largely located within Paradise, which is an unincorporated town in Clark County, Nevada, which Las Vegas is also in Clark County, but it's adjacent to the city of Las Vegas.
Huh. That's interesting. That is news to me. I have learned something today.
I have too. And I'm reading, like, I have this right in front of me. I mean, this is legit. Paradise contains McCarran International Airport, the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, and most of the Las Vegas Strip.
Now, you should know this as our resident wrestling fan, if this is true or not. Johnny on Twitter has tweeted to all of us and said that he has heard, especially on WWE pay-per-view events, that they have billed the card as from Paradise, Nevada, not Las Vegas.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that.
So you don't that does not ring a bell to you?
No. I mean, I've heard of Paradise. I have heard of Paradise, Nevada, but
oh, I've heard of Paradise too. I've got my versions of Paradise. But I don't believe it includes Paradise, Nevada.
Yeah. Maybe not. But wow.
No. So nobody was willing to touch that. Nobody was willing to go there.
Nope.
Well, this is something that Pekka said, though, that
got
I think
awfully
is
quiet
important.
When I said that.
Crickets.
Here's another important part of the equation, listening to Pekka, and I've read this. John Tavares, there has been a committee put together. I don't know if we've really discussed
players.
This in full. Mm-hmm. There's a committee of players. John
Connor
Tavares.
McDavid.
Connor McDavid. John Van Riemsdyk. A couple other guys.
Hal Gill.
Not Hal Gill.
No?
But no, Skillsy is not on the committee, but there are obviously league officials on, owners on this committee, and they're all talking through all this with health experts. But one thing that the players have made very clear, Tavares said it in detail with Pierre LeBrun over the weekend, and Pekka, I think, echoes this. They need at least 3 weeks. I think Matt Duchene said this to you, Chase, too, in his interview with you. They need at least 3 weeks of a training camp before they could think about playing in a game. And I understand that. Maybe even longer, realistically. Craig Smith with us last week was talking about the building blocks. You know, when you're training, you're ramping yourself up to get ready. There are building blocks that you got to lay down before your body is ready to go full throttle in very, very important games. Right? You just can't run out there like we do in the pickup game and say, you know, I'm going to be sore as heck tomorrow. I haven't played in a while, but I'm just going to let it ride and deal with it. I mean, that's just not how a real professional athlete works. So that's part of this, too. You could be 2 weeks into a three-week program and then have to face the facts that this isn't going to happen. I don't know. There's just a lot of things that they're going to have to do just to get it started.
But I can understand if there's $1 billion on the line and, you know, they're not going to, as the articles explain, they're not going to get all of that back. But you got to try something if
no
it's
question.
That much money.
No question.
So I think
it's just going to be a long process.
Sure. And it might be July or August before they're actually playing games. And that's why, you know, we started this conversation, I guess, 5.5-6 weeks ago. Of why are they so hell-bent on finishing the regular season? There's no way they're going to do that. Well, that's why, is the money, and so they don't have to credit it to the, you know, next year, and then they can have the playoffs. So, I mean, I understand if there's $1 billion on the line and I'm involved in that, I'm going to figure out how to make it work.
The logistics side of it, though, I just don't see why it's worth trying to crank up the teams that are clearly out of it. I just don't see how those teams are going to be motivated. I don't see how their scouts and coaches and front office people
would want them to be out there. I know. I'm amazed
We
keep talking about trying to finish up the regular season. Like, to me, that is such a dead issue to me.
It's going to be complicated enough as it is.
It's already complicated, and you're still trying to figure out a way to finish up those 12 games, basically. To me, I don't even know why that is still a discussion piece. It should be completely tossed out, in my opinion.
Well, the discussion piece is money, but at the same time, it's still. I mean, you got to be realistic. You got to cut your losses, and let's focus on what can be done. That's how I see it. I know they're going to go down this road as long as they can, though, and try to do it all. I saw today that the NBA, which was reported over the weekend during the draft, you may have seen it. Is it Gene Wojciechowski? That's the reporter for the NBA. He said that the
Adrian Wojnarowski.
Adrian, yeah. Who's Gene? There's a Gene too somewhere.
I think he does college.
Yeah. Okay. So Adrian,
he's an author too.
He had a May 1st date that the NBA was going to, in theory, reopen some camps, right? So players could get in there and start training. That has now today been pushed back to May 8th.
May 8th, yeah.
At a minimum, right? So It's always dangerous to throw out any date.
Yep.
Because you risk having to change
that
date.
Stop going out. It's just silly. Especially early on. It's one thing when the PGA says middle of June and they're throwing that out 2 months in advance. Like that's okay. That feels a lot more realistic, but this constant of, you know, just around the corner, next week we're going to do this, or 2 weeks, it's like you're just setting yourself up for failure. By the way, could you do this for the show purposes? Your next telecast, could you start off the broadcast by saying, "You are looking live, Smashville, Tennessee."
Yes.
From Smashville, Tennessee.
From Smashville, Tennessee.
I've never said Smashville, Tennessee. Well, I have said Smashville.
Let's create our own province, right? If Vegas can do
it. Is that what it is, a province?
Well, I don't know. If it's Paradise, Nevada, why can't we have Smashville, Tennessee?
Well, and to wrap this segment up, I want you to know that I'm working for the people of Nashville to give them the history of our great United States. Paradise, Nevada was founded in 1950. Because Mayor Ernie Cragin of Las Vegas sought to annex the Las Vegas Strip, which was unincorporated at the time, in order to expand the city's tax base to fund different things that he wanted to do. There were two towns that ended up being formed, Winchester and Paradise.
All these years I've been fascinated by that town, and how did I never know that? That is mind-blowing to me. And there's somebody else we know that's probably – they're listening. I wonder if they know. Now, hold on a second. We'll come back. Joe Ward will join us to start the fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. Former Predator, recently retired. We talk to him next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.